Imogen Tarita joins us, and we're talking about our furry compatriots. I remember my first pet was called Blackie. Love that dog, and I still remember it to this day. Imogen, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm fine, Wasanga. How are you?
I'm well. So one of our callers was actually talking about how they appreciate how much compassion I have for animals. And it's easy to forget about them during the pandemic and our four-legged friends. So can you just tell us from your own experiences at the moment and with regards to the shelter you run, how has the pandemic treated animals?
Okay, I'd just like to clarify, the Clunie Animal Trust that I volunteer for, we're not actually a shelter, we're a veterinary welfare organization. So a little bit different from what a lot of other people are doing out there, but not to take away from any shelters. The pandemic has hit people very, very hard because the choice they have to make is, do they feed their family or do they feed their pets? And a lot of the food packages and parcels that have been going out go out without any sort of food or anything that really could be shared or given to animals. Of course, there are things that could be given to animals, pups, things like that. Vegetables could be used to make up a good, healthy meal. But when you're having to decide to feed your family or to feed your animals, it's very easy for animals to get forgotten.
It brings back to a lot of, I think, wartime, I think, movies that I've seen. We see the dog and it's struggling and somehow it manages to survive and those kind of things. I just wonder, a lot of dogs, unfortunately, and due to the circumstances of the family, they depend on scraps off the table. But the more we've discovered that our pets have very complex digestive systems. And I can imagine as you talk about what happens to those dogs when a family cannot afford food for themselves and that dog depends on those scraps.
To be honest with you, in a lot of cases you will see dogs that are just left, dogs that aren't fed. And it just becomes a matter of survival. And that is why we started a feeding scheme throughout the COVID-19. We were quite lucky. Based on what we do, we don't have any surplus funds. All the money that we raise goes to medication and veterinary costs. And we put a call out, and we were quite lucky in that our Facebook community came together so quickly. We raised enough money to get over 4 tons of food. We are sort of on the last ton, as it were. We've been out and about and giving food to people in our community every single week. And from that point of view, it's been very rewarding but very challenging at the same time, because that is over and above what we normally do. And just making sure that animals have a meal at night.
And if you've just joined us, we are, of course, talking about our furry compatriots. We are joined by Imogen Tarita, volunteer at Clunie Animal Trust. So on the lighter side of things, you have a special team member called Daisy. Can you tell us more about Daisy?
Daisy is a fantastic team member. She is, as far as we're aware, the only independently owned and operated mobile operating theatre. She's kitted out with 2 theatres. We take her into the rural communities in the Free State where we operate. Daisy, the money for Daisy, actually, it's a funny story, was donated to us anonymously some time ago, and we just had to call her Daisy. So we like to think that we are often driving around the area that we work in, and that we drive past the donor and they smile. That's our story, and we're sticking to it. But we couldn't do a lot of what we do if we didn't have Daisy in our lives.
Oh, I love that. And, I think rural pet care, that's where you got me. I think that's something that we do not often talk about. When we think about rural places, we think about scarcity. We think about, we think about underprivileged people. And to a certain extent, there is a lot of scarcity, but there's also a lot of joy. And when you talk about young children everywhere across the country, I'd like to think those opportunities for a child to own a pet, to learn how to look after it, and at least be allowed that opportunity to bond with their pet is available for them as well. What would you say, and how do we really tell the story of rural pet care?
I think the rural pet care that we see, if we go out into a community, for example, Kwakwa, when we pull up in Daisy and we arrive, we literally see people running towards us. People do care for their animals, and you do see cruelty. I'm not going to say that you don't. It would be a lie to say that you don't. But to see the children and them with their puppies and their pets, and they come along, we spend an awful lot of time educating children as much as we can about seeing or understanding what certain diseases could look like, making sure they understand the importance of vaccination, why it's important to make sure that they do have water. A lot of dogs do spend their lives on the end of a chain, although that is illegal in South Africa. One of the big things that happens is people chain up their dogs because they don't have a fence and they don't want them poisoned. Poisoning of animals is huge in our community. And to treat an animal that's been poisoned is, we've had many very successful cases, but they aren't easy. They aren't cheap either. So we spend a lot of time with children, and we really appreciate when we do get to do that. It's not something that's always possible. You know, if you're, we have had days where we have spent the time sterilizing and looking after 60 animals. That's with a very small team, you know. So we're sterilizing, looking after, treating, vaccinating. And then education is something that's always important. It does get done, but it's always hard to balance everything that we need to do. But when you see a child with a puppy and they understand how important it is to look after them, that's a very rewarding experience.
I can imagine the amount of work that it got goes behind it. Where are you at the moment with your annual Mandela Day campaign?
Well, our annual Mandela Day campaign is one that's close to our hearts. We do it over and above what we do every day and week. We live in an area where, in the cold front, I didn't check the temperature, but it usually gets down to about, you know, today would be minus 12 this morning. It's cold. And as I said, a lot of animals, people can't afford food, so they definitely can't afford to go out and buy a cozy kennel. So we build with the help of a Johannesburg company. They supply all the wood to us in Johannesburg. We then cart it from Johannesburg all the way down to Clarens and Fariesburg, where we're based. And we build 100 waterproof dog kennels every year, which we then put a bed, bedding, carpet, whatever we can get our hands on, and we give 5 kilos of food, and we hand that out to people and animals that we see that are in need. This year's been a little bit tough with COVID because we've been so busy. Being a small team of eight, building 100 kennels is no mean feat. But we've managed 43, so we're quite proud of ourselves. And we decided, that we would carry on building the other 57 that we need, and we'll hand those out as we go. And it's all done in celebration of Mandela Day.
Tarita, how can I and other animal lovers listening in at the moment, like the caller who just commended us for our conversation today, how can we get involved? For me, getting my dog when it got a kennel, it just made me so happy, and I can't imagine being able to do that for another person. How can we assist?
Well, any animal welfare, I'll speak on behalf of everybody, because it's very hard for all of us. None of us, no animal shelter in South Africa, ourselves included, get any funding from anybody. There's no lotto money. Of the $500 billion that's been given out to COVID, not a penny goes to animals. It's hard for us. So if you can imagine that animal welfare organizations like ourselves, you know, we were dangling by a thread before COVID. Now you have people dumping animals because they can't afford them. We all need help. We all need something. So in terms of what the Clooney Animal Trust needs, in particular, people are welcome to contact me. I can give out my contact details. We have a website. My email address is Imogen, which is Imogen at clooneyanimaltrust.co.za. We are very active on Facebook. Our website is www.clooneyanimaltrust.co.za. And I must just point out, Clooney is spelled C-L-U-N-Y, not like George and Amal, because I'm sure we'd have a lot more money if they were involved. But we always need help, money, food, bedding, even just time. Sometimes, you know, if someone could help, I know that we can't cross borders necessarily, but could come and help build the kennels. tires for Daisy. You can just imagine the licensing fees for Daisy every year. And we do that all entirely on donations. Mm-hmm. So medication costs what it costs. We don't get it any cheaper because we are a veterinary welfare. And if you've ever taken your own animal to a vet, you'll know how expensive that can be.
Yeah, I was thinking about, because I think for me, the most horrific thing I heard actually was the fact that I was shocked to find out how many dogs are poisoned, how frequently it happens. And farm owners specifically, when you talk about farm attacks, the first line of defense is usually our pets. And even in our own homes, they are guard dogs to a certain extent. And the concoction, which is used to cure a dog from poisoning, animal poisoning, is so expensive, Imogen. So yes. It's so tragic that some people, the only choice they have is to let their pets die. If there was someone perhaps who was listening with regards to government, if we could tap into some conversation to them, what would you say to them? Because I do believe this is a discussion that we need to take into consideration, especially when we're doing funding and those kind of things. Who would you speak to?
You know, that's a very good question. We've animal shelters ourselves, we do talk to each other. We do try to come together. There was something at the beginning of the pandemic where we all signed up. We were all putting things forward as a collective, but it just doesn't seem to go very far. We appreciate that there's not enough money for, I mean, people are starving right now. You hear that on the radio all the time. But the issue is there are pets out there. And also it would be wonderful if, for example, the lotto could open up to give it, you know, they stopped giving money in 2018. Then you have corporates. Corporates, BEE is important to corporates and they do give a lot of money. But, for example, they won't give money to the Clooney Animal Trust because our beneficiaries are animals. Mm. But the animals are owned by people. True. And, you know, so from that point of view, to help animals across the country and to start to see some also more teeth when it comes to issues of cruelty. You often get told, we had one recently, we were with the SPCA at the court, and then we were there all day long. So all day long, one of our volunteers took the time to be there, to be told at 4 o'clock, this case isn't very important. It's being struck off the roll. Come back another time.
All right. So if you've just joined us, we are, of course, at the tail end of our discussion with Imogen Tarita, volunteer at Clooney Animal Trust. That's C-L-U-N-Y Animal Trust. And I love the selfless nature in which you've approached this, Imogen, the way in which you said that you'd like to represent if anyone is around a place that provides food or protection for dogs, they can get involved with those NGO. Once again, thank you for your time this morning and all the best. Please do be safe during this time.
Thank you, Asanga, to you as well.